scooter searching for his crew. Seemed like the homeless walking pretty and you can't find the room to move. Hush. Well, everybody better move over, that's all. Cause I'm running on the bad side and I got my back to the wall. Hey! 10,000 Visa. Hey! 10,000 Visa.
You get it? Freeze out because it is freaking freezing outside. I think that's pretty brilliant on my part.
Bravo, sir. Bravo.
Yeah, yeah. This is our first, in 3 months, our first fastest 40 minutes in podcasting. And I am Bill, as always. With me here is Ross. We are very much in mid-Missouri here. We are very much learning why Wisconsinites are so good at freaking drinking. Because what else are you supposed to do when it's below freezing every single night and there's too much snow to drive on the roads?
Somebody needs to bring us back some beer from Wisconsin.
Somebody
at Rock Inn, get on that now.
Yeah, because I actually, I'm drinking a Capital Brewery Blonde Doppelbock right now. I only have two left, so somebody needs to make a trip.
We need to bring back the Slow Crush, by the way.
I was going to mention that. I was hoping you were drinking one right now.
I'm not, but maybe by the end of the podcast we can get something figured out.
I cried when you put pictures on Facebook there. That was... My crowning achievement was from our one baseball podcast 9 months ago, where we had just moved into this house and I had nothing else to drink but slow gin and whatever soda was in the fridge. It was awesome.
Great crush.
I'm telling you, it was you don't taste the, you think you're just drinking Coke or cola and then bad things happen.
Fun times.
All right. So, we were going to pretend like we'd actually still been doing these weekly for the last 3 months and just pick up where we left off a week ago. But I guess we shouldn't lie to our three listeners. We should actually try to go a little more macro here. I figure we could start by talking about our impressions on the Big 12 play overall for Mizzou basketball this year. You've been on press row for most of the conference home games, if not all.
Minus K-State,
right.
Yeah.
The good one. And...
Some might say A&M was good.
Well, yes. So I guess we'll start with you first. Just in general, like, how has this team progressed as compared to what you hoped they would at this point?
The thing that's maddening is I think they're pretty much as inconsistent as we all presume they could be. You'd think heading into the conference season, we might have a better beat on what to expect from this team. As much as we know... perhaps what should happen, what needs to happen, what has happened. I don't think we quite yet know what's going to happen. And while that's exciting in one sense, and we saw something to that effect last year, I think you and I probably both hope that we might have a better beat on what this team is going to bring night in, night out, as it pertains to right now going into, you know, an important stretch of February.
Yeah, I think it's funny, like no matter how accurate you end up being with your preseason predictions, living through it is still different. Like, we knew this team was going to be inconsistent offensively. I mean, we could talk ourselves into otherwise, but we knew. I mean, it was there was too much offense being taken off the table last year with Damari Carroll and Leo Lyons. I don't count Matt Lawrence too much just because it's a lot more, you know, we can say, you know, we missed three seniors. That sounds better than missing two seniors. But, you know, halfway through last season, Goose wasn't bringing a lot to the table. And what worked for us later in the season was that either Lawrence or Kimmy English were pretty consistently showing up, one or the other. But so we'll say we're missing 2.5 star seniors.
That's one of those facts that whether or not you include Lawrence depends on who you're talking to. If you're trying to convince a fan from another school, you're like, whatever, we lost our top three scorers. And then, you know, if we're having a discussion amongst ourselves, we don't even count Matt Lawrence.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Kim English has been every bit as inconsistent as Matt Lawrence was, and every bit as streaky, he and Marcus Denman, as Matt Lawrence was last year. So we have that contribution down just fine. But obviously, just having two guys in Carroll and Lyons who could put up 12 to 14 each night, most of the time when Leo wasn't in his own, you know, Leo Lyon's planet, so to speak. But, you know, we knew this would be inconsistent. We knew that this would be a team that struggles to rebound sometimes because they struggled to rebound last year with, again, Carroll and Lyons, and now they got smaller. But living through the season regardless with a team that is inconsistent offensively and struggles to rebound sometimes, it's still frustrating. You still see just enough glimpses of hope where you think that, okay, now the switch has been flipped. You know, with they rebounded well against Illinois and Georgia, you thought, you know, they figured it out. They've, you know, they're attacking the boards better. And then they just have lapses. But that's, over the course of a season, that's what happens is, you know, you just... A team that's going to end up a 7 seed in the NCAA tournament was probably good enough to beat a 2 seed and probably bad enough to lose to a lot, you know, worse than 10 seeds that they'd be playing in the first round. And that's pretty much what we've seen. We've seen really, really great play, and we've seen some really less than great play so far.
Yeah, and it's something Anderson loves, you know, talking about progressing game to game, and who doesn't? It's a coaching cliche staple. It's just frustrating if you're a Missouri fan, which obviously pretty much anybody listening to this will be, at least the people that didn't turn it off after the slow gin discussion. But no, it's something where you hope that you had seen the progress at least stay somewhat consistent. Perhaps maybe, you know, you see the progression of one player and then they're able to maintain that level, somebody else able to progress, even if it's just, you know, minor progressions, but it's one of those things. Miguel Paul goes up and throws like 15 points, and then next time he steps foot on the floor, he has a brain hemorrhage at midcourt. it's frustrating, if nothing else. But at the same time, I mean, I think we all agree the ceiling remains high. The only thing is, we have no clue where the floor is either.
I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and he was complaining about some fans being this way, but really, I think I'm this way at the same time. You know, it's really easy to just want to give up on Miguel Paul. And Kimmy English, you know, it feels like right now, you know, he should be growing a little more, a little less streaky, you know, playing, making a few less bad decisions, things like that. Lawrence Bauer still disappears from time to time. Marcus Denman still disappears from time to time. And he said, you know, it kind of annoys him after a while because they're all sophomores. I mean, this is exactly the same thing we faced with the football team this year, where, you know, but all things considered, it was a great season, but when you, or a good season, I shouldn't say great season. But when you see every play, when you see every good play followed by every breakdown, you want to talk yourself into the fact that maybe these sophomores are different than a majority of all other sophomores who have ever played college football or college basketball. But they're just inconsistent, and you know that's what we see here. Marcus Denman looked good enough on Saturday against Colorado that I'll be really frustrated the next time he takes 2 shots in a game. I want him to push the issue a little bit, even if it means his percentages go down, just so I know what his ceiling actually is. Because like I said on Sunday, I'm pretty sure his ceiling is Missouri's ceiling at this point. He's the guy who's shooting 48% from three-point range and 2 points. He's the best combination inside-outside shooter we've got. And, I mean, hell, he almost rebounds as well as Justin Safford.
Which is, congratulations, I guess?
Sure. That means he rebounds like a power forward.
That or Justin Safford rebounds like a shooting guard.
Yeah, well, I was going to go with the first one myself.
Feel free.
Yeah, but, this is a super young team that is capable of falling asleep for 4 minutes, giving A&M a chance to play 9 of the best minutes of basketball I've ever seen, and breaking up their long home winning streak. But like I said, you know, when you're only a good team and not a great one, it's really hard to win 33 games in a row at home.
Yeah, and the other thing is, if the home loss isn't as concerning as the fact that I think people are thinking that now any trouble Missouri might have on the road, even against bad teams, might have completely disappeared. And I mean, to that effect, Missouri's, 2-4 in true road games, and that's Tech and Colorado, who are something like a combined, 5-12 in the conference. So those demons aren't gone yet, which is, I think, incredibly important, considering, I know everybody wants a shot at Texas right now, but I really think that, and I'm interested to see if you agree with me, that probably Saturday's game in Waco means as much as anyone left on the schedule.
Well, I would say I'm definitely more worried about the trip to Waco than I am Texas visiting here.
Who would have guessed that through 9 conference games, A&M would be sitting at 6-3 and Texas would be at 5-4?
I just assume Texas is going to pull it together at some point, probably just in time to visit Columbia. But, I mean, they're struggling right now with just, well, same kind of thing, consistency, because they are playing a lot of young, they've got the one, obviously the big senior, and then they've got Pittman's, a junior, and then Avery Bradley's a freshman, and Jacobin Brown is...
Brown and Jai Lucas are both transfers.
Right? Yeah, they're both sophomores, I believe.
Well, and they've played pretty much this entire season without Perez Ward, too.
Right, and, it just, in general, they are a young team that's going to go through ups and downs, too. They have definitely hit a bad stretch here, but they've got plenty of time to start figuring things out and putting things together. So, long-term, I'm not worried about them, but you do kind of wish we would play them sooner than later before they do figure things out. Now, Baylor, though, I mean, in general, you look at how Texas teams have faced Mike Anderson in the last few years, and you look at how Baylor teams have faced Mike Anderson in the last few years, and considering the talent on hand, Baylor teams have managed to do pretty well against Missouri. Obviously last year Missouri had the talent advantage and beat them twice, including, in the finals of the Big 12 tournament. But, the year before that, they whipped Missouri at home. The year before that, they lost a tight one in Columbia, despite the fact that they weren't very good in 07. Scott Drew seems to have a beat on this kind of style, and he is more likely to outcoach Mike Anderson than Rick Barnes at this point. Anderson has done very well against Rick Barnes the last couple of years, especially. So,
but it's a style that lends itself well to getting up and down the floor with Missouri. You know, if Baylor's able to run it and take some open threes, they're going to. You're not going to get that from a lot of the lower tier teams in the North.
You want to know that just about the oddest stat I've seen from Ken Pomeroy so far, as I have dived into college basketball the last couple of weeks. Baylor, their tempo, they're only averaging 66 possessions a game, which is 237th in the country. Which confuses me, because when I see them, maybe it's just I'm still thinking of the Curtis Gerald's teams. But yeah, when I see them beating Oklahoma 91-60, for instance, it's kind of jarring. But I think this tells you one thing: it shows how efficient they are, that they can score 91 and 83 and 80 plus many, many times while still playing a low possession game. They are extremely good offensively, ranked 12th in the country, actually, according to Pomeroy's stats. And thanks to the shot blocking of their big men, one in particular, Ekpe Udoh, they've got a good defense, too. So, I would chalk that up as potentially the most likely loss remaining on the schedule, honestly. I'm more worried, except for maybe Kansas at home, obviously. But, I'm more worried about that one than I am Texas visiting this time next week. As we've talked, it's 4 wins. We need 4 more wins. If you beat Iowa State at home tomorrow night, if you beat Colorado a couple weeks from now, that's 2. So at that point, even if you only split on the road with Nebraska and Iowa State, that means you still just need 1 win against Baylor, Texas, Kansas State, or Kansas, which isn't an automatic. But I'll take my chances with 1 win among those 4.
I mean, if you look at it this way, if you either, hold serve at home, win all your home games,
yep,
or whatever home game you drop, get one back on the road.
Yep.
I mean, it's really a very, very simple way to look at it.
And with 2 games against Nebraska and Iowa State, I honestly don't expect to win both of those games.
But, of course, before Texas comes to Mizzou Arena, they get to go beat up on Nebraska, with 3-4 days beforehand. So I've got a feeling Texas will have it together by then. That's not to say that I know Burnt Orange Nation is in Rick Barnes' meltdown right now.
Yeah.
That's not to say that Barnes will have figured out what he needs to do to make sure they're able to roll with Missouri. But it seems like Texas would be well-suited to playing Mizzou regardless of how much disarray they're in at the moment.
You just feel for those Texas fans so much, don't you?
Yeah, it must be rough.
It's so hard. All right, so looking ahead now, I mean, we've talked about what Missouri needs to do to make the NCAA tournament. I do think it's pretty cut and dry. Go 4-4 and you make it. Chances are they're going to end up, you know, the odds are good they'll end up where they are being projected right now, which is in that 7, 8, 9 seed range. You know, maybe they get hot and make a 5 or 6. Maybe they get cold and make a 10 or 11. Most likely they're going to be in that little mid rung area. And honestly, I'm okay with that.
Again,
you can look back and when you watch every single game, you can think of how close they were to beating Richmond or Vanderbilt or basically every team they've lost to except Kansas. all 5 of those games, they lost by 7 and 6 and 1 and 5 and 3. When you live through every game, you get really, really frustrated at the near misses. Like, we can look back on football and say they were that close to 10-2, but they were also that close to 6-6, and 8-4 sounds about right. That's kind of the way this is shaped up so far. We've been really close to a lot more. We're really close to 20-3 right now, but could have lost to Texas Tech pretty easily. Could have lost to Illinois, really, with if they missed free throws down the stretch. Could have lost to Old Dominion. I think this team, I think a 7 seed is about what this team really is this year. And you know, even if that just means a first or second round exit, it's a frustrating seed being a 7 because, like I said earlier, you immediately look past the 10 thinking, you know, how do we match up against the 2? But you've pretty clearly lost to teams worse than the 10. Otherwise, you wouldn't be a 7. And so it's kind of a dicey situation. But the goal here for me was just get back to the tournament period. Build towards next year, welcome Tony Mitchell and Phil Pressey and Ricky Kreklow and Kadeem Green with his one good leg. and just build for the future and not hit a speed bump and finish 7th in the conference and miss the tournament like a lot of people said.
Yeah, at the same time, you're having to assuage a lot of Missouri fans that have become, take your pick of verb here, either accustomed to or jaded by success. These are the same people that absolutely lost their minds during football season, not completely sure of what to make of an 8-win season in a rebuilding year with sophomores and freshmen just stacked through the roster. So at some point, I think there is maybe perhaps the weight of expectations that you and I maybe see past a little bit, but it's something that's concerning. But no, I'll agree with you for sure, especially if you can get up to the 7. You know, if you're 8 or 9, then of course you're immediately staring down the number 1. I think, you know, maybe outside of, I wouldn't touch Syracuse right now, and I wouldn't want Kansas again. Let me rephrase that. I would want Kansas again. I don't know that I would like our chances. Maybe if you catch Villanova on a bad day, I could understand that. And Kentucky, who you just don't know how they're going to respond, I could understand that. But, man, you would love to have that 7 seed.
Yeah, I mean, not only was your first-round opponent a hair worse, but your second-round opponent is a hair worse, too.
Yeah.
So, I guess, really, you, at this point, you don't want to put all your hopes and dreams into a 7 seed. But that's kind of, I think, what we're staring at now. Unless we get hot. You know, this time, it was, I think, this night, this Wednesday last year, when Missouri beat Texas, and suddenly fans were going, holy crap, are we good?
This night last year.
It was either a Tuesday or a Wednesday night last year.
I believe 365 years ago, I have no idea what happened then. 365 days ago tonight, I believe, was Missouri-Kansas at Mizzou Arena.
It was
February 9th, was it not?
Oh, yeah, I'm a week off. Well, okay, well, anyway, that was a good night, too. Regardless, 51 weeks ago, we didn't know that that Missouri was anything beyond above average. So the switch can get flipped pretty quickly. You know, we were doing the Lou Brown countdown to 9 wins last year. I think it was 10 wins last year in conference, and we blew right on by 10 wins. So, you know, things happen, but right now I think Missouri fans should be pretty satisfied deep down in their cold black hearts with a 7 seed when all is said and done. Yeah, this, as Seth would say if he's here many, many times, this, you know, just being in for O this year was just not fun. It's just not enjoyable with all the screw you Pinkles and all that going on.
In Houston.
You
should not have been. It was bad.
And I just, big picture, people, big picture.
Positivity.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so we've reached the 20-minute Mark, and we've only alluded to football. We haven't actually talked about football as an overall conversation topic anyway. And that's kind of giving me the shakes. So we should probably move to recruiting, among other things, I guess. First of all, Gebre Moye is gone, apparently.
To none of our surprise.
Yeah, it is kind of an interesting place to be in. Where, I mean, you can look at the depth chart, and pretty much every position, there's a guy who's probably, in a lot of cases, a sophomore, maybe about to be a junior, who is staring at a bunch of sophomores and juniors ahead of him on the depth chart, and wondering if there's ever a chance in hell that he's going to make it, even on the second string, much less first. And, I mean, it's not starting rumors to go through and just check it out. You know, there was Gebre Moye at running back. There's John McGaffey, your boy.
Yep.
At wide receiver, there are a couple Texans front on the offensive line, and what's his name, Daniel Jenkins, and Taylor Davis, who have plenty of time to make something of their careers, but they're staring at a bunch of guys the same experience level as they are. You look at maybe Marcus Marlboro, DN, maybe George White or Jimmy Burge at D tackle. And, of course, like 18 different linebackers since we're stocked there now. You know, there are so many guys that will find out who loves it here at Mizzou and who's in it for playing time, I guess.
And we're not in the in the business of guessing or betting on these guys, but off that list you rattled off, who do you think's likely to stay? If you rattled off that list and immediately the two names I disagreed with, probably first and foremost, was Marlboro.
Yeah, I think,
and then after I think White stays as well. Burge, I can definitely see though.
Well, Burge actually, his dad is big on Power Mizzou, so he might be one of those that just really, really likes being a Missouri Tiger, and a lot of them will. Either Burge or Burgie or however you say his name, and or White, you know, one of them has a chance to make the second string this year. You know, we're so excited about Lucas Vincent coming in. That, you know, I'm almost picturing him having a really good chance of getting playing time. And, of course, Marvin Beast Mode Foster coming back from knee surgery. There's going to be both of those guys play well, then you got those two along with Rizzono and Hamilton, and that's a potential two deep. But if one of them doesn't, since it's hard to rely on a freshman and a redshirt freshman, then at the very least, White or Burge has a chance on the second string. But the other one might not. And so I'm kind of curious, again, like some people don't mind being third stringers. They just love being college athletes. They love Missouri. Think of Del Howard, for instance.
Yeah.
Mac Breed, guys like that. but it will be kind of interesting to watch, especially as spring comes to a close and maybe they haven't made the move that they hoped they would make in the spring. You know, we're going to lose a couple more guys. And whether it's a lineman or a wide receiver or whoever, it's going to happen. And, you know, it's one of those good problems to have, I guess. That means your depth is good enough to where a guy that you were pretty high on never really got a chance on the field because the guys ahead of him were better in practice. So, yes, just be prepared. I was actually pleased with the reaction from the fan base, you know, oh my God, we're losing a 4-star, but they actually, you know, held it together for the most part when it was announced that Moye was leaving.
Yeah, we should wish him nothing but the best, especially if he's getting a shot to play quarterback somewhere else. I'm genuinely interested to see how he does.
Yeah, and I mean, he was just kind of, you know, he looked really good in his six career carries at running back, so I was kind of curious what he would do at an FCS-level school at that position, too. So we'll see what happens. But, I mean, obviously, he's a good athlete, but, I mean, like we said, I think we thought more of him athleticism-wise because he was a 4-star recruit, and he just didn't have a position. He wasn't quite fast enough for safety. He wasn't big enough for linebacker. He wasn't, I guess he didn't have the arm for quarterback. I assume that was the major issue. And, you know, he just wasn't as advanced running back as the guys ahead of him. So, I wish him all the luck in the world. I think, who was it, J.P. Tillman that ended up starting for Grambling or something? somewhere in there, I think it was. Not great.
Grooms and Tillman both. They were in the mix at least. I can't remember which one saw playing time.
Well, I think Tillman, because when I was going through the play-by-play, they were playing an FBS team, and he got sacked, and I knew his name and got excited.
yeah, he's at Grambling State.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
I pulled that right out of the
At least he was in 2008, where he went 57 of 116 for 596 yards.
Well, hey,
five touchdowns and no interceptions.
Well, there you go. Oh, I think we're doing. I think we're doing pretty well at quarterback, though. So, I almost like we've talked about the incoming recruits a lot at Rockin. Not obviously not in a podcast, but I guess the one thing we can touch on before we move to 2011 recruiting, because we still have to talk about football. There's no choice here.
This is what we do. It's
yeah,
who we are.
Of all the people we've said we claim to be excited about, who do you think has the best option? Just thinking about the depth chart and their own skill level that we know about. Who has the best chance of making the fastest impression of the incoming freshmen?
Are we talking like on the field impression, or are we talking like Donovan Bonner wrecking shop and camp and getting everybody talking impression?
Well, I'm almost thinking more of actually being on the field.
I can't argue that it'd be anybody other than any of the wide receivers. I don't know which one it would be in terms of Hunt, Lucas, or Sasser, but I don't know. You can make an argument for a lot of the other positions that the opportunity is as available.
Yeah, I think the only... I'm curious what happens in the secondary this spring.
Yeah.
Because I do think there's a spot on the second string for either Tristan Holt or EJ Gaines or Xavier Smith. Or technically, you know, I mentioned those three, but obviously Daniel Easterly and the JUCO guy, Kenrante Walker, that's how I'm saying his name anyway. But we've already heard good things about him from the coaching staff.
Don't rule out Kenrante.
And he's a junior, so it's a technicality, I guess. But yeah, I mean, they sound pretty impressed with him, and he's another Jarrell Harrison. If he can manage to be a little better than Jarrell Harrison was last year, well, Harrison started, so.
Well, and then the other thing is what do they do with Ruiz?
I say Darvin Ruiz.
That's okay. That's what I was planning on going with, but I didn't know if somebody was going to correct me. So, no, I mean, if they're practically creating a position for him and they're just creating the safety version of Andrew Gatcher, who knows what he can do?
Well, and yeah, the linebackers, you know, he and Jared Parham. Parham. Okay, good. And then, or maybe Greg White if it doesn't work out at running back. There are some interesting options at linebacker, but I almost think we're set there. So, yeah.
Oh, you're not going to get an argument from me about the linebackers. We've had this discussion.
Yeah, we're losing a first-round draft pick, a potential first-round draft pick from the linebacker unit, and it's the one we're most excited about for 2010 almost.
Yeah, and I'm just drooling, especially whenever you popped up Xavier Gooden's 40 numbers.
Yeah, blame Gabe at Power Mizzou for that one. Even if Gabe said he ran a 4.37, even if that's really only like a 4.47, damn, he's 2.25.
We'll settle from that. We'll settle for that from our linebackers.
Yeah, but anyway, to move to 2011 recruiting, I don't know how much you've been able to keep up with it at this point, but since you know there is no break in the calendar, we immediately, as soon as signing day passes on the calendar, we immediately switch our attention to the next year's class. Gotta say, four commitments at this time of year for Missouri is amazing in and of itself. But consider
us the four.
But yeah, one of them is Sheldon Richardson, who ironically will now count as a five-star recruit twice in Missouri's recruiting rankings.
Wait, who's that guy?
Yeah, maybe
totally kidding. Totally
yeah,
kidding.
Some JUCO guy. And they've also already gotten commitments from who Gabe said were the top two players in the state. And I mean, we'll see how the rankings play out when they actually get a chance to be at camps and play in their senior year. But he said his preliminary top two in the state were the quarterback from Lee's Summit, Corbin Burkstresser. And
what an awesome name, by the way.
Yeah.
That is easily shooting up the list for most awesome names of Missouri recruits ever.
Well, and then he's also gotten a commit from the supposed number two guy, running back out of St. Louis named Anthony Pearson, who happens to go to Sheldon Richardson's high school.
And not only that, is listed as a running back, but it said he wants to compete in our secondary.
I want to be a lockdown cornerback, which just, you know, made us all a Twitter.
A tear of joy.
But it is quite
my face.
It is quite possible that both of those guys will be four-star recruits. it's less certain about Bergstresser because he's all potential at this point, supposedly. He hasn't really done a whole lot on the field yet, but he's like Blaine Gabbert in the whole looks amazing in a uniform thing. I think Pearson will almost certainly be a four-star recruit. And then they got the guy from Hickman, Wesley Leftwich, who was the fastest guy at whatever camp he was in and supposedly broke Percy Harvin's speed record, which, you know, whatever. you don't have to be faster than Percy Harvin, but if he's even remotely fast, his highlight footage shows a guy who can really go out and catch the ball. Who knows if he's a good route runner, if he's good in the classroom. We don't know any of that. But just the fact that he has a real nice 40 speed, and his highlight video shows a guy who's really good at adjusting to the ball in the air. I'll take that.
Yeah.
But really, at this point, to have four commitments, especially in a class where you might only be looking at 16 to 20 guys, depending on how many others transfer or don't qualify, it was amazing to be basically done with recruiting in December this year, and it looks like they might be racing to try to do the same thing this time around.
And again, I'll be curious, I think you probably will as well, to see how selective they are given the limited number of spots they're going to have.
Well, a lot of really, really elite players have listed Missouri, and it might have just been a charity, yeah, I got an offer from them. But guys like, there's a guy named Dominic Pettis, two guys from Duncan, Oklahoma, who Rivals had as two of the top three in the state. Dominic Pettis is a linebacker prospect, and Dylan Dismuke is an offensive lineman. They both have offers and have expressed interest. They're both going to OU. We both know it. But the more they can flirt, the more Josh Henson can get in the door, the further he can last in the process each time, the better it'll pay off later. And I guess Oklahoma's number one prospect from Oklahoma City, Josh Turner, a cornerback, is also listed in Missouri at this point. They're being aggressive there. They're on the list for Hakeem Flowers, a 6'2", 180-pound athlete from Greenville, South Carolina, who, according to his list, has offers from Arkansas, Auburn, Baylor, Boston College, Cincinnati, Colorado, Duke, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Iowa, Iowa State, Kansas State, Kentucky, LSU, Maryland, Memphis, Miami, Michigan, Michigan State, Nebraska, North Carolina, North Carolina State, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, Pittsburgh, Rutgers, Syracuse, Tennessee, Texas Tech, UCLA, and West Virginia. In other words, they're going after the national guys.
Was that not everything that certain online communities have been wishing for forever?
Yeah, and it's going to be an interesting recruiting year with the state of Missouri because it's apparently pretty loaded at the top as far as potential four-star guys, but really it's not very deep. You know, they've offered 6 guys from the state of Missouri so far, 7 if you count Sheldon Richardson. And we're just passing along what Gabe has said in the past, but there really might only be a couple more offers coming out of that. That's not a very deep class in the state, and especially if they get a couple more commitments early. Yeah, do they wait around? Do they try to play the game for these guys like the ones I just mentioned, or Cedric Reed, the big stud defensive end out of Texas, or do they try to lock their class down as quickly as possible like they did last year? And, I mean, hopefully they'll have another successful season to advertise to these guys in the fall. But, yeah, they're turning into a very efficient recruiting machine. And, you know, I have no complaints about that whatsoever.
I don't know if it's as efficient as, say, Texas having 25 official visits and 25 signed.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
That is absolutely just wrong.
How much, you know, people were making a big deal about how much Alabama spent on recruiting a couple of years ago, like $750,000. How much does Texas spend? Like $25,000? Do they just fly Mac in, he lands, he visits the home, he gets the commitment, and that's it? He just does that 20 times? Like, how hard is it to recruit for Texas at this point?
I think Muschamp just yells until they start signing.
Okay. But yeah, no, it's interesting. Some of the stories coming out of recruiting this year, I think every year it gets a little more detailed and we learn things like Alabama spent $750,000 or Texas got a commitment from almost every single player they offered. The other side of this is that I can't help but touch on are the insider pieces I wrote last week about the value of recruiting. We just now started to kind of dive into how how much of a value is there to getting that top ranked recruiting class, or is it just like a sport to pass the time in the off season? And I gotta say, like, when I ran correlations between, you know, recruiting averages and your performance on the field, things like that, it was a lot more predictive than I expected it to be. As far as, you know, recruiting classes, just average recruiting classes leading to actual success on the field. And, you know, it's kind of a no brainer, you know, duh, good recruiting equals good production. But I mean, it was almost as predictive. You just looking at recruiting numbers, it was almost as predictive as looking at like a team's recent success on the field. And, I guess, you know, the fact that Missouri has achieved a certain level with classes ranked in the 30s and 40s, and they just signed a top 21 class, that, you know, that really can't be a bad thing.
What a buzzkill there.
Yeah.
It had to go to 21. You couldn't say top 20.
I know. But at least Nebraska didn't pass us at the very last moment. That's pretty much all I was rooting for it down the stretch. But,
well, the thing I found interesting, at least about Nebraska's class, is that they bring in the quarterback whose name's slipping my mind at the moment. And everybody's freaking out about the talented kid they're pulling in. I don't think they, Missouri fans at least, are realizing how much lower rated he is than Franklin. I mean, I guess in some eyes all four stars are created equal, but at the same time, you know, Missouri fans are blowing off, blowing off is a bad term, but at least somewhat ignoring Franklin and Gabbert in this class in terms of immediate hype. And yet at the same time, Nebraska pulls in a lower rated kid who's supposedly going to, I don't want to say turn the program around. I mean, they did win the North this past season, but he's supposed to be an immediate game changer.
That would be Brian Carnes.
Yeah, there you go.
A 6 foot, 180 pound quarterback. I guess that's about what Tyler Gabbert is. Yeah, I mean, of all the advantages Nebraska might have over Missouri, it's really hard to imagine them having better quarterback talent and depth than Missouri does right now. Just in regard to having Gabbert, having little Gabbert, which we'll at some point I'll stop calling him that, because, you know, you don't want to be relying on a player who you're calling little.
We will stop referring to him as little Gabbert as soon as he comes on and has a weekly fan post about what it's like to be a quarterback at the University of Missouri.
Well, we're throwing down the gauntlet. Yeah, no, and Nebraska ended up with a pretty good class overall, but it's kind of funny with Missouri fans especially, and I mean, I'm as guilty about this as anybody. Part of the reason I wanted to do those columns on recruiting is, you know, we've talked ourselves into recruiting mattering, but not really, because you know, Brad Smith, Sean Weatherspoon, and I went out of my way not to look at individual recruits. But just the better depth of talent you have, you know, no matter how many 2- and 3-star kids Missouri has had that have overachieved, they've had a whole lot of 2-star kids that have failed. And if you can get just your recruiting to a certain level and then rely on the coaching and the player development, you know, that's going to be important moving forward. Especially if Nebraska does seem to be gaining some traction that we really didn't think or hope that they would get. A couple years ago, and you know, who the hell knows what to expect from Nebraska this year? Whether whether that defensive line really was just full of talented, super talented guys across the board, or whether Ndamukong Suh was so freaking great that by him attracting quadruple teams, everybody else was getting, you know, single or worse or less than single covered. But I'm really curious to see what that defense does moving forward. It really is becoming an interesting battle in the North of Missouri's offense versus Nebraska's defense. And everybody
knows you and I are going to break that down more than enough in the upcoming months.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm already kind of stuck as far as trying to figure out what Nebraska's defense is capable of. I'm going to be relying on my numbers as much as possible, because how much difference can one amazing player make on a defense? They went from horrific in 07 with Sue to good in 08, to great in 09. And, you know, coaching-wise, that doesn't necessarily usually happen that quickly. So I'm really curious what they do without Sue this year. Obviously, I hope they crash and burn, but I'm doubting it. But it could be fun. Gotta just sit back and wish that whoever Mike Alden hadn't agreed to play Missouri-Nebraska on a rainy Thursday night. Ifs and buts, candy and nuts, etc. Well, we are at the 40-minute mark. Out of respect to Seth, I am not going to do an all-sports report because I don't do it justice. But I will just say that wrestling was improving up until they lost to two teams ranked ahead of them this last week at home, OU and OSU. Gymnastics has been doing well. They peaked almost in the top 10, but they're at about, what, number 14, I believe, now.
Well, big ups to Sarah Shire.
Yeah, who wins the Big 12 Gymnast of the Week pretty much every week. Softball's getting ready to start their preseason top 10. It is unfathomable to me that we have such a good decent women's overall athletic program at this point. Because we, you know, when I got to school here, it was nothing. Gymnastics has always been pretty solid, but you know, softball was starting to trail off. Women's basketball wasn't really anything, and we didn't really have a lot to hang our hats on. Now pretty much women's basketball is the only anchor dragging everything else down. And you know, God bless Cindy Stein, but you know, whoever is coaching our team next year, if she can get the women's program just back to the middle of the Big 12, which is really tough considering how good the Big 12 is now, the overall health of the women's athletic program in a whole, with gymnastics, with softball, etc., is pretty staggering right now. And hopefully, you know, the little Creclo I'm calling her Little Creclo in hopes that she also writes a weekly fan post.
That we might actually be able to work
with. Yeah, seriously. Yeah, that one. But, you know, if volleyball can take another couple steps forward and get back to being in the NCAA tournament every year, that's quite a few teams that the overall women's program has going for it. And that's, you know, pretty cool.
And all of them are not that many steps away from the next level, whatever the respective next level is. I mean, volleyball is not that far away from being in contention for tournament bids again. Softball, I mean, who knows what they're capable of? I mean, everybody except, like you said, I mean, maybe basketball and I guess track and field, we're always going to have the powers down in Texas. But, right. You know, I don't want to say that the next level is extremely attainable by nearly every single team, but as long as you have the correct reference point for what the next level is, I mean, things definitely look up.
Yeah, it really, we've said it many times before, but yeah, Mike Alden, for all his PR faults that he had going for a while, really the patience he has shown and the money he's been able to raise have both been pretty, you know, instrumental in the overall building of the program, where we're disappointed in 8-win seasons and 7 seeds in basketball. And, you know, just lots going on here. And hopefully after basically all the programs had at least a slight reloading season this year, hopefully the next couple of years are as good as the 08-09 year was, and as at least as good as this year was. So I think we might be done. I think we can go back to talking basketball for a while. We're only at 43 minutes. Usually we don't slow down until at least about 55. But but I think, you know, hopefully we can pick these up a little more frequent heading into the future, maybe break down individual games a little more. We just wanted to consider this your touching base podcast.
Well, we didn't want to talk about food?
Well, if you haven't tried moussaka, do it.
Yeah, I made the horrible, horrible mistake of watching Travel Channel's Chowdown Countdown tonight. Oh, my goodness. Oh, what a horrible, horrible idea to watch that show.
And I have no problem talking about food, since I know you and I are the only two Guy Fieri fans on Rock'em Nation.
Yeah, so suck it, Sleepy and GHTD. That's why you're not invited on the podcast right now.
I'm not saying I enjoy him personally. I'm just saying... The food he represents is awesome.
All I want to see is good food being eaten. It's not that difficult.
I come from Oklahoma. Like Friday night, we almost went out to eat. We almost grabbed some food on the way back home from snowy work. And we decided at the last second, you know what sounds better than eating out anywhere? Biscuits and gravy. So I have my grandpa's biscuits and gravy recipe. We came back. I made it. We ate the crap out of biscuits and gravy. And it was just the greatest meal I've had, probably since the last time I made biscuits and gravy. The kind of food on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives just makes me cry. And I'm not 250 pounds, so I've got that going for me.
Yeah, says the man who can finish a filthy Diablo.
Well, I probably couldn't today. Let's just say that I that was the right time and place in my lifetime. But, yeah, anyway.
We've seen better days.
Getting old.
What a downing note to end a podcast on. Do we have music to get out of here?
I don't know. Like, I can, you know, I can always go with the 4-minute brass bonanza. Or if you've got something, you know, if you have a suggestion, I probably have it on the iPod.
Let's call it a surprise and discuss this off off the air. And everyone stay tuned.
Yeah, this is about to be the greatest song you've ever heard in your life, even though I don't know what it is yet.
This was basically a 45 to 50 minute tease for the last song.
Well, we'll hopefully you'll hear from us again in a couple weeks. But until then, go Tigers.
If not, we'll see you in 3 months.
That's right.